From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. As Hurricane Dorian slams the United States after ravaging the Bahamas, the effects of climate chaos are once again devastating millions of lives. Over the past few months, the mounting impact of the climate crisis has activists clamoring for the Democratic Party to hold a presidential debate on the existential threat facing our planet.
We want to see a substantive debate on these issues, not just high-level talking points and a media spectacle.
At last month's party convention, party officials voted on the question, despite DNC Chair Tom Perez's concerns that a climate-focused debate would be unfair to candidates who are more focused on other pressing issues.
We want to make sure we don't change the rules in the middle of the process.
Party rules state that candidates can't share a stage if there isn't an official debate. So on Wednesday, CNN used an alternate format, a 7-hour town hall, 10 candidates, 40 minutes each, and some hard-hitting questions, not necessarily from the moderators, but from an audience of activists and students and professors, like this one for Democratic hopeful Julian Castro.
Reports warn that we only have 11 years to get off fossil fuels to have a safe, livable future. But as mayor of San Antonio, you welcome the fracking boom. Why should we trust you as president to transition our economy to renewables, given your past middle ground approach?
From a ratings perspective, it was a bust. CNN fell dead last among the three cable news broadcasters for the night. But for activists, including members of the Sunrise Movement, which had been pushing for the topic to be front and center, it was an unequivocal win.
This is the most we've ever talked about climate change on American TV for years, just ever. We had about 6 minutes and 23 seconds in 2018, which is less than the royal wedding got. We just got 7 hours.
David Roberts covers energy and climate for Vox, and he watched the whole thing, at first dreading it.
There aren't a lot of things that we do as humans that we're going to enjoy consistently for 7 hours running. But also, my experience with cable news and climate change, generally when they cross over, the results are generally not great.
And yet the format, though it was 7 hours long, was a blessing in disguise.
In the end, I think that this event was, on almost every score, way better than a debate would have been. Just way more substantive, way more revealing about the candidates, way more educational for the audience.
One of the standouts of this town hall were the audience questions. Do you agree that this was part of why these discussions stayed on track?
They were just so good. I was like, I could not come up with a better question than that. A lot of them were about personal experience, you know, sort of my house got flooded.
My family lives in western Pennsylvania, where fracked gas wells have become a common sight.
Part of having a spinal cord injury means that I can't regulate my body temperature. July was our Earth's hottest month on record.
Mm-hmm. I have seen firsthand the devastating impact of mountaintop removal coal mining.
But then there were also really pointed and well thought out and informed policy questions.
I'm 34. My family is discussing the transition of our dairy farm to the next generation, but we're experiencing unprecedented weather events, economic and environmental challenges. And so I am wondering what you can do and what your plan is to bring stability back to the ag sector.
Policy questions that are not well known enough to make it into sort of mainstream debates.
Are you in favor of changing FEMA rules to encourage retreat from properties that have suffered repeated catastrophic losses?
Yes.
And if so, how would you implement those changes in a way that's fair and equitable?
But are really relevant in the world of climate policy? In a sense, it was inspiring to me to see all these, you know, ordinary people coming forward.
You have wavered at times in your stance on eliminating the filibuster. How do you intend to implement the climate policy we need to prevent climate disasters like Sandy if bad actors like Senator Mitch McConnell intend to use the filibuster to block climate legislation?
Even if your sole criteria for questions is who's tough, even on that score, the audience questions were better. They were tough in a genuine way. Like, usually tough just means respond to this Republican talking point, right? Which is just like the dumbest kind of question. And these audience questions were genuinely tough. And the same thing when Biden was up.
Now, I know that you signed the No Fossil Fuel Money Pledge, but I have to ask, how can we trust you to hold these corporations and executives accountable for their crimes against humanity when we know that tomorrow you are holding a high-dollar fundraiser hosted by Andrew Goldman, a fossil fuel executive?
He's not a fossil fuel executive. I'm telling you.
To his chagrin, I think the standout moment of Biden's time in this thing, that was an audience question.
And one cool thing about that is that CNN knew it was coming. Anderson Cooper was prepared to give the contextual information.
Let me just inform our audience about some of the details that Aaron was talking about, because I think it's important. I think a lot of people don't know about
But they didn't feel the need to have Cooper or anybody else grandstand the question.
Exactly.
They had it come from the people.
Yeah, it was really cool. And it just made me think someone at CNN chose those people, right? Like, these were not randomly selected people. So whoever that is at CNN clearly knows what a great question looks like when they see one. So it just made me wonder, why is it so often the case that the cable news moderators themselves ask such terrible questions? I don't fully understand the motivations of cable moderators, like exactly what they're trying to get out of this, but whatever it is they usually do, they did much less of it, I'll say that. There were almost no horse race questions, right? To my great shock and surprise, not a single candidate was asked, sort of like, this is not a top-tier issue for the public, so tactically, why are you doing this? Or like, strategically, how are you going to win with this issue? Like, there was almost nothing like that. And those kind of things usually dominate political discussion.
Let's talk about Wolf Blitzer's question to Andrew Yang.
Oh, geez.
Are all Americans going to have to drive electric cars?
Well, electric cars, it's not something you have to do. It's awesome. And so over time, yeah, we're going to make it so that electric cars are the thing to do. You feel like you're driving the future. And I did not just say that because Elon Musk endorsed me just the other week.
So are we all going to have to drive electric cars?
We are all going to love
You know, this is something that came up again and again. The idea that the public will be forced to give up something they love.
Yes.
It's like it's being stuck in the they're going to take away our guns box.
Regular Americans, we don't have to make many sacrifices. I mean, we all like our Amazon Prime.
Before, that one was a new one to me. I'm like, what? Whose climate plan goes after Amazon Prime? Where is that even coming from?
Elizabeth Warren really pushed back.
But do you think that the government should be in the business of telling you what kind of light bulb you can have?
Oh, come on. Give me a break. You know.
Is that a yes?
No.
As though if the government got into regulating product safety, that would be a new development. Oh, no, the government is telling us what kind of products we can have. That's outrageous. Like, as though every product in your life is not the result of government regulations in a market that governments help set up. The whole thing is so silly. I was so glad Warren laid into him over that. This is what fossil fuel companies want us to be talking about.
They want to be able to stir up a lot of controversy around your light bulbs, around your straws, and around your cheeseburgers. When 70% of the pollution, of the carbon that we're throwing into the air, comes from three industries.
And that's what Wolf Blitzer and Aaron Burnett, all of them, that's what they return to over and over again. Whose taxes are you going to raise and what are you going to take away? And I was really glad to see Warren finally challenging the premise.
Regulations are expensive and are going to deprive you of the stuff you love.
Exactly, exactly. This pollutant that you want to restrict, how much is it going to cost to restrict it? How much is it going to slow economic growth to restrict this pollutant? And then on the positive side, what part of nature will be better off? Right? I think this is the trade-off that most people see, sort of like you slow the economy in exchange for helping nature. This is what informs questions about environmental issues generally. It's the economy versus the environment. It's the oldest dichotomy in the book. It's the dichotomy that Newt Gingrich tried to write into the foundation of DC conventional wisdom and was largely successful. Cable news moderators still bring that basic frame of reference to this issue.
What do we know now that should have changed those questions?
Right. I just don't think it's a good model for climate change, because this is not sort of like, one byproduct of one particular industrial process we're talking about here. We're talking about the basis of our entire infrastructure and energy system. We're talking about the basis of civilization. So if you're going to change away to a system that doesn't rely on carbon, you're not just talking about clamping like a scrubber onto your coal plant, right? Like some old pollution. You're talking about re-industrializing the country along new lines. So that means like new, not just new technologies, but new practices, new products, new markets, new behaviors. We're talking about fundamentally transforming the way we live on Earth, right? And that's just a bigger thing. So for instance, how much is it going to cost? When you reflect in on climate change, the danger of climate change, you know, the dangers that scientists are talking about, like half the world's species going extinct, you know, trillions of dollars drained from our economy every year, giant swaths of the world becoming literally uninhabitable by humans. It's just a more fundamental issue. And I don't think that's completely sunk in yet.
Even journalists don't understand the stakes.
Most, I think, don't. But that's what I think is changing right now. Like, that's kind of what's exciting to me. And I think that's what's exciting about the town hall, too, is one chapter in this story is finally, in this primary season, is just an absolute flourishing of people educating themselves on climate change, you know, like CNN anchors writing to climate journalists saying, study me up on this stuff. Like, if you remember the debate on CNN, Candy Crowley was the moderator, and she sort of famously said, this is something all people in my world remember.
Interested in, I think, immigration, gun control, and immigration were, and women's issues were the three big ones. Climate change, I had that question to all you climate change people. We just, you know, again, we knew that the economy was
climate people are off worrying about this. It's not a real thing that real people worry about. It's not a real mainstream thing. That is the way they viewed it then. And now I think that kind of dismissiveness toward it among the DC elite media circles, I think that's going away to the good.
But what about Wolf?
Except for Wolf. He's going to be the last one.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you're paying attention to this.
David Roberts covers energy and climate change for Vox. And he watched all 7 hours of the CNN town hall.
Coming up, let's talk about the weather.
This is On the Media.